Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 70. 70 shows, Sean.
Man, and it is a great show number 70. That indeed, Mr. Wally. Of course, we have an awesome, awesome guest for today. And of course, that is none other than Jack Thompson, also known as the Throwing Samoan from Washington State University. So definitely looking forward to that, Sean Wally, on show number 70.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I had a chance to meet Jack in Pullman on Saturday at the Washington State Cougar home, the true home opener for Cougar football, first game at Martin Stadium. So it was an honor to meet Jack, and he was eager to come on the show.
Well, man, of course, you know, we'll get a chance to talk with Jack here in a few minutes. But, man, there's some exciting things that went on this past weekend. Of course, what we're talking about is the NFL. And, of course, you know, even though it's early in the season, it shows the parity of the NFL. And what I mean by that, the San Francisco 49ers going down yesterday against the Chicago Bears, of course. Then the Seattle Seahawks go into San Diego and run into that juggernaut of Antonio Gates and Phillip Rivers. And then, as I say, the parity of the NFL goes on. The more things change, the more things stay the same. The Oakland Raiders taking one on the chin again at O.co. Oh, my God, Sean Wally, I don't even know what to tell you as far as that's concerned, man. It's just looking ugly this early in the season.
For the Raiders, are they able to keep hope alive? Are there things you can cling to and say, okay, this is making progress. We're getting better here. I'm hearing great things about Khalil Mack.
Yeah. I mean, there are the great things going on with Khalil Mack. Of course, you know, Derek Carr has shown that he is very steady as a quarterback. There are some bright moments that are being presented with the Oakland Raiders, but at the same time, there's question about what's going on in the locker room, and these are the murmurs that have been said throughout the offseason and last year. And, you know, people aren't too happy with Dennis Allen in Oakland. They're not too happy with you know, what's being put on as a product on the field. And, you know, Reggie McKenzie, there are some things that are being said about him. You know, and the list goes on and on. The biggest thing, Sean, was yesterday, you know, Charles Woodson came out and, you know, said that it's embarrassing. They're embarrassing. And, you know, it's just a joke and that the team sucks. And these things are coming out of the locker room in week two, Sean. And so, oh, man, I don't even know, man. I can't even begin to tell you how much it pains me to watch this debacle going on in Oakland. I think we have some technical difficulty going on with Sean Wally's microphone. We'll deal with that in just a second. Some of the other goings on that have been going on that are going on right now, actually, Monday Night Football. And when I mean Monday Night Football, we have the Indianapolis Colts, and they are steady as the race goes, up 17-6 on the Philadelphia Eagles, just kind of waiting on Chip Kelly to get this team in high gear. And, of course, you know, they have a high-powered arsenal, meaning the Philadelphia Eagles just haven't been able to get it going. They've been able to move the ball up and down the field, but haven't been able to get into the end zone. On the other hand, with the Indianapolis Colts, Andrew Luck with a TD toss, and, of course, Richardson finding the land of quick six as well. And so right now at the half, the Indianapolis Colts are up 17-6, and that's Monday night action. Sean Wally, we got you back.
Now, Sean, my question for the Eagles, are they going to do what they did last week and come out guns blazing in the second half? Granted, they're playing a better team tonight in the Colts where they had the Jaguars last week.
Well, the Colts have their backs against the wall, Sean, and what I mean by that, they started out, they lost last week, and of course, if they lose tonight, they're looking at 0-2, And that's a daunting task, especially for a team like the Indianapolis Colts, who have playoff aspirations, have a strong quarterback and Andrew Luck. But yes, Sean, what you're saying is it, you know, it took a little while for, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles to get going last week. And of course, they came from behind to win. And, you know, that is the great part about the NFL, which is something that, man, before you, your microphone levels went off there, I was, you know, we were talking about the Oakland Raiders. Chip Kelly is very good at making adjustments at halftime. And if you're going to have longevity in this league, you have to be able to make the adjustments. And I believe Chip Kelly does just that, you know, coming out into the second half and gets his, and I say he gets the team going. You can't keep Shady McCoy locked up for too long. And, you know, as I had mentioned earlier, they've been able to move the ball, meaning the Philadelphia Eagles. It's just getting into the end zone. And so I'm sure that the Eagles will make those adjustments.
And, Sean, what did you think from the Sunday night game where the Bears spoiled the Niners' home opener in their new stadium?
Man, you know, I don't know what to think. Of course, last week, you know, we made our predictions the week before on what was going to happen, and I picked the San Francisco 49ers to throttle the Dallas Cowboys, and they did just that. I wasn't quite sure what the 49ers were going to do in their home opener. I mean, as you were saying, they're in their new digs for their first regular season home game. And of course, the spectacle looks great on the outside, and what I mean by that, if you're looking at it on TV, everything looks great. But there are still some things that need to be broken in if you're a San Francisco 49ers fan, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, and actually talking about the game, you talk about a tale of two halves. Man, the San Francisco 49ers came out and were handling business in the beginning, up 17-0, I believe. And then in the second half, everything fell apart. And, you know, you have Colin Kaepernick throwing three interceptions and having a forced fumble. So he is accredited for four turnovers in this game. And, you know, I just don't know what to think. You know, I mentioned my disgust as far as the whole Ray McDonald thing. That's a whole nother issue. But I just think that San Francisco is masking some problems. And if they don't get things right, and I know, again, this is early in the season, but if they don't get things right, this could wind up going south real quick.
Yeah, it's interesting. Pretty much a Jekyll and Hyde scenario right now in San Francisco, how they, as you said, throttled the Cowboys, and then you've got your big spectacle, the new stadium, you're trying to blow the roof off, even though there isn't one, and start it with a bang, and they totally lay an egg.
Well, you know, against the Cowboys, this is weird. So against the Cowboys, the San Francisco 49ers, either the fans travel well, or they're already planted in Dallas. But, you know, Dallas is going through some growing pains as well as far as, you know, getting a fan base to back them, even though they're quote-unquote America's team. There were a lot of 49er fans in Dallas. So whenever anything was going on as far as the 49ers were concerned, you heard a loud roar. Now, with the new Levi Stadium, you expected to have the San Francisco 49ers to have a strong backing. They're at home. It's the first game of the season. But yet, they seem to have more Chicago Bear fans in the stands, and it sounded like the San Francisco 49er fans were sitting on their hands. Man, I'm doing a lot of rhyming here. But, it just didn't seem like home field advantage for the 49ers.
We'll have time to get to more NFL later in the hour. Let's go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines, and it's my pleasure to welcome in Jack Thompson, former Washington State Cougar, great quarterback. Jack, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Hey, Jack, thanks for being on the show here. And, of course, man, you know, I can't begin to tell you all the great things that, you know, as far as Washington State University folklore, I mean, you know, the list goes on, throwing for, you know, thousands and thousands of yards and actually, you know, going into the NFL being the number one pick, no, I'm sorry, first round number three pick by the Cincinnati Bengals. And I know that that seems like maybe a little bit of time ago, but, man, those are still some great things.
That was a long time ago, and probably before you were born.
It was a great experience.
It was a great experience and you know, something that certainly very honored that I was able to be in that position.
Now, Jack, maybe some of the listeners don't know. Of course, you're a Pacific Northwest legend going to high school at Evergreen High School, and then, of course, going on to Washington State and then playing in the NFL. You do a lot in the community. And so what are some of the things that are going on these days with you as far as helping out in the community? I know that, you know, being a dad is one of those things that you continue to do. And so, you know, what's going on with you these days?
Well, it's kind of a hodgepodge of things. You know, in my lifetime, I've been one of the things I've always wanted, always liked doing is working with young quarterbacks. I've had the pleasure to work with several quarterbacks. A lot of them are cousins, sons of my cousins. Tavita Pritchard, who went on to be the quarterback at Stanford, and he is now their quarterback wide receiver coach down there, and Cepho Leofua, who is the starting quarterback for Colorado. He's my cousin's kid, and I take great pride and I enjoy working with these young men. They're great guys and, you know, great athletes, and it's fun to kind of keep my finger in the mix of football in that arena. In addition to that, I work with a foundation that my sister Pat runs. It's called the Yes Foundation. It helps the underprivileged kids in our neighborhood in White Center, Washington. And just a bunch of things, and it helps keep me busy outside of my banker life.
And what you're talking about as far as the banker life, I know that I believe it is you're a mortgage banker. And
well, I was. I'm in private banking for Umpqua Bank.
It okay, for Umpqua. Sterling. Okay.
Yeah, and we merged with Umpqua in April of 2014, and it's a nice marriage of two community banks, and you know, our headquarters in Portland, we're still a community bank, albeit a very large community bank, and I work in the private banking side of things.
Now, Jack, you had mentioned some things as far as developing quarterbacks and helping family members. Of course, you know, you and I have a strong tie in that. Once upon a time, I was the receivers coach at Clover Park High School with David Pritchard.
There you go.
was able to be a part of that with Tavita, and you would come and help out there, and of course your son Tony would come in and support and watch, you know, the Clover Park High School games. And of course Tony went on to Washington State, and Tavita went on to Stanford, and of course there is another nephew of yours that's playing at Washington State right now, and Tana Pritchard, and he is actually a linebacker there doing some great things. So yeah, you are definitely playing a strong role in developing some awesome athletes.
Well, that's not work for me. It's my passion in terms of, you know, working with young men and the Pritchard family. David, the father, David Pritchard. I've known him since he was in diapers, so we go way, way back. He has quite a family, the Pritchard family, and the boys, Tana and Tavita. Tavita, as we know, has gone on to, he's doing so well at Stanford as a coach, and Tana is leaving his mark at Washington State University as a linebacker. He was a quarterback, as you know, he was playing at Clover Park, but he didn't play like a quarterback. He played that position of quarterback like a linebacker. He would go out of his way when he was flushed out of the pocket. He wouldn't, like normal quarterbacks, he'd either slide or go out of bounds. He'd go headhunting.
He took the Jake Locker approach there.
Oh, yes, yes. And he would wreak havoc on the defense when he was flushed out of the pocket, as I said. And you know, linebacker position is a perfect place for him because, you know, I watch him, and he's like a quarterback out there, you know, on defense and in getting the defensive linemen set properly and getting, you know, the defensive plays called properly.
Jack Thompson with us here on The Double. And, Jack, you're talking about coaching and teaching the quarterback position. What are some of the key points that you're trying to instill in these young athletes?
Well, we can go into the minutia as far as, you know, the like the delivery and your footwork and all those things, as, you know, quarterback specifically. But what I try to tell them is that, you know, quarterback is a position that, it, you know, has more, it's more than just the physical aspect. But, you know, there's the studying. And then, of course, the most important part is the leadership aspect of quarterbacking. And you know, these are things that I, when I work with quarterbacks, I really pound that home as far as leading your team and getting, you know, making sure that nobody outworks you and that you're the first in, last out, all those intangible things. I love coaching up. And you know, I see my quarterbacks, again, with Tavita, you know, he's now teaching that to his quarterbacks. And Cephal Leifau at Colorado, he's a tremendous leader. And he started last year as a true freshman, the last six games. And now he's their starting quarterback, and he is a great competitor. And I take great pride in you know, being there to help wherever I can.
And when you left Washington State in the late 1970s, you were the most prolific passer in NCAA history, over 7,800 yards. What are your fondest memories of playing for the Cougars?
Well, the game that really stands out for me is going back to Lincoln, Nebraska, and playing against the Cornhuskers in their home, you know, stadium. And I remember there, I woke up Saturday morning and they had this caricature of the Cornhusker dragging a beat up Cougar. It was a cartoon, and we were 24-point underdogs. And just going into that stadium and, you know, knowing that we could beat these guys, and we did. And it was a wonderful experience because you will find no more classy fan base than the Cornhusker fans. Even though we beat them, and it was a hard-fought game, at the end of the game, when we're running into the locker room, and obviously we were so excited, but we looked up, there were about 40,000 people in the stands giving us a standing ovation. That's something I'll never forget.
Jack Thompson, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And, you know, Jack, you know, you're mentioning playing at Nebraska, and of course, one of our guests last week, Michael Gray from 710 ESPN, was saying the same thing about the Nebraska fans. And, you know, that must be, you know, a strong testament to their program over there and understanding football.
Well, all of the above. But in addition to that, you know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, the rural community that that the Cornhusker fan base draws from. And, it, you know, it's very similar to Pullman, you know, in Washington State University, you know, with the ag you know, countryside and the whole bit. It's just a different culture altogether, and frankly, one that I really appreciate. And as I go back to, you know, my days in Pullman, Washington, and you know, literally, I gave a speech at almost, if not every town within a 100-mile radius of Pullman, Washington, and you get to experience some great things. You know, I was with a lot of. I was in small communities, farm-based communities, and it's different. You know, the people there, you know, they have tremendous work ethic. They are as honest as the day is long, and they are loyal as the day is long. And so those things made an indelible mark of my psyche for the rest of my life.
Now, Jack, you know, mentioning those things there, and of course, when you were coming up as a young professional athlete, there were some adversities that you came across, of course. And, you know, being a Samoan American football player going into the NFL, you know, a lot like African American quarterbacks, there were some tough times for you. And now would you correlate going to school in the rural areas as a testament to having that fortitude to withstand some of those things, those adversities?
For me, again, that's another endearing factor, you know, my experience at Washington State University. And I never experienced some of the challenges as a good friend of mine. And, you know, we were kids going to school, going to college at the same time, Warren Moon. He was at University of Washington. And I remember having, you know, telephone conversations. But this is back before the cell phones, guys. And we used to talk. And he was lamenting you know, a lot of the things that he had to put up with, you know, playing at, you know, Husky Stadium. And thankfully, I never had to deal with that. Again, you know, which goes to why I love the school as much as I do. And I was treated with tremendous amount of respect, but, you know, I gave it back as it was deserved. And so I didn't experience a lot of things that a lot of my, you know, ethnic quarterback counterparts had to deal with. But, you know, for me, my experience at Washington State was awesome. And I try to put, you know, pay that forward in everything that I do with regards to helping be a representative of Washington State University in Pullman, Washington. It's a very special place.
And Jack, Saturday in Pullman, the Cougars got their first win of the season, dismantling Portland State, and it couldn't have gone much better. The weather was perfect. You know, you're there as you always are. You haven't missed a game in 12 years. Keith Jackson came back. Just a phenomenal day for Cougar football.
It was. It was idyllic, that's for sure. I mean, the weather couldn't have been more perfect. And, you know, Bill Moos has instilled an attitude at Washington State University. When he took over as AD, he wanted to change the culture and to expect bigger things. And when he hired Mike Leach, you know, that was an extension of that vision. And, you know, Coach Leach has gone about, you know, changing the culture within the football program specifically. And in honestly, as much as I love my school and I love our team, our fans, you know, there's got to be a culture change amongst the fans. You know, we need, when we go to the games, you need to stick around for the whole game. You know, it's funny, I take pride. I got criticized a lot when I was playing. And you know, that's just the nature of the beast. Well, you know, what goes around comes around. You know, our fans need to step up and be there to support our team. You know, I'm proud to say that, you know, I've been to, you know, every home game for the last 12 years. Even more proud of the fact that I've never left a Cougar game early. I've stayed to the last, you know, to the last play. And I take pride in that because at the end of the day, that's what fans should do ideally. And that's what I want to encourage the fans to consider, you know, to stay there to the last play. And let's face it, guys, you know, during the last decade or so, we've seen some good games and we've seen our share of bad games. And to stay there to the last play, I think that's a slow thing to do, you know, to culture to change. But I want to encourage that amongst the Cougs, you know, because it does mean a lot to the players. It means a ton to the players when they see the fans stick around. You know, we're winning handily against Portland State, and people were leaving at the midway through the fourth quarter. Can't happen. That can't happen. We need to stick around and celebrate. I mean, people didn't see Luke Falk's first touchdown pass as a Cougar. That kid is a talented quarterback. You know, he's in line to take over when Connor leaves. And, you know, these are the things that we need to help foster moving forward.
Now, Jack, you obviously have great passion for Cougar football, and you mentioned Bill Moos and the things he's done with Mike Leach and the football complex that opened. How do you get the change in the culture? And you look at what Keith Jackson said over the public address system, looking at the stadium, the campus, the upgrades to the football, Martin Stadium and the complex, why wouldn't people want to go to school here? Why wouldn't people want to come play here? They now have everything they should need.
Yeah, and they do. And it took a guy like, you know, Bill Moos with that vision. And his whole thing is, you know, to build facilities that would draw the talent needed to sustain a winning tradition year in and year out. You know, yes, we want to go to the Rose Bowl, but we want to go, you know, have a shot at the Rose Bowl every year. And in order to do that, you have to have, you know, full cupboard. With regards to talent, and the talent that we have that Coach Leach has built in Pullman, it's awesome, but they're still young. And we need to win this year and win consistently. And at the end of the day, it does start with winning on the field and winning consistently. And so, but in the meantime, as we do win, our fan base needs to grow with that as well. Because it is a team effort. You look at, you know, the 12th man here with the Seattle Seahawks. Well, that didn't, you know, happen overnight. It, you know, everyone kind of fed off of each other, and the players feed off the fans feed off the players, you know, performance on the field. And we got to get all that in sync, but at the same time, we got to, you know, as fans, we need to do our part.
Jack Thompson joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express, and of course, on slate for the Washington State Cougars this upcoming weekend is none other than that huge, huge Pac-12 foe, the Oregon Ducks, coming into town at Wazoo. That one's on ESPN. Sold out, Jack. And so, man, they'll get indoctrinated, meaning the fans, real quick as far as staying out of football contest.
Well, you know, I read a great article on the Stanford Cardinal. And in this, in Sports Illustrated last week, and they focused on that that big game between Stanford and USC. I don't know how many 6 years ago when Tabitha Pritchard was a sophomore, redshirt sophomore, and he was the backup quarterback until about 3 days before the game, and they were 42-point underdogs, and they're going down to play the Trojans down in L.A. And they're ranked number two in the country. The Trojans were, right. And you know, Jim Harbaugh, in changing the culture of Stanford at the time, they were perennial dogs in the Pac-10. But when Harbaugh took over, he said, "Hey, who's the biggest bully in the block?" Well, it was USC. He says, "I want to, you know, that's who we got to beat. That's where the bar is set." And my thing is, you know, the biggest bully in the block, you know, for the last decade or so in the Pac-12, Oregon Ducks. Why not us? Why can't it be the Cougars in Pullman this Saturday against the Duck team, who will probably come in either two or three rated team in the country? You know, back in the early 90s, Tim Rosenbaum took a Cougar team down to play against Troy Aikman in Pasadena. They were ranked number one, UCLA Bruins were, when we played against them. And guess what? We beat them. And so it can happen. And it's a mindset, and, you know, that's the kind of game that can really, it's a program maker, let's face it. And so I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being part of the sellout crowd, and I want people to be there to the very last play.
Now, Jack, we've been talking about culture, and we've been talking about changing the culture as a fan base. Now, earlier in the show, you had talked. We were talking about you developing the quarterbacks and developing, you know, family members who play football.
Yeah.
What's your take on the NFL? You know, there are some things that have been going on over the past couple of weeks, the past week, as you may know, with the whole Ray Rice situation, of course, in San Francisco, Ray McDonald. What do you think needs to happen as far as the culture is concerned with the NFL, how they're being developed in college? Because you know more than anything that is a huge component as far as going on to the next level. What does Roger Goodell have to do, or what's going on, or what's missing as far as that culture is concerned?
Wow. We don't have enough time to go into that. You know, because that talking about a culture sea change, it starts right at the top with Roger Goodell, and having a consistent message coming, you know, right from the NFL, you know, from the top cat, and that's Roger Goodell. As far as, you know, dealing with these issues, it starts with him, and frankly, a lot of it ends with him. So he's got his work cut out for him, because at the end of the day, you know, these issues, you know, they have to deal with it, because, you know, the NFL brand is taking a big time hit, unlike anything I've seen in many years. Because up until now, Roger Goodell was like, you know, he was the sports commissioner, extraordinaire. You know, he was the commissioner of the biggest, most profitable sports franchise in the world. And now with these issues, he's got his work cut out for him. And again, it's bigger than just, you know, casually, you know, dealing with it in a conversation like this. But I will say that I'm looking to, you know, the office of the commissioner and seeing how they handle it, because, you know, obviously right now, you know, given what has happened with Ray Rice in particular, that's been mishandled. And so how is he going to rebound? And, you know, now you add on the Adrian Peterson situation. It's quite a cluster. And, I wish him well, because the game is suffering for it.
Jack Thompson, we appreciate you hanging on with us here tonight. Thank you so much for your time and insight. We could talk to you all night. It was a pleasure meeting you Saturday at Martin Stadium, and I look forward to catching up with you in another couple weeks. And we will, go Cougs. Let's see what happens when they play Oregon on Saturday.
Hey, why not us? Go Cougs. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jack.
Take care.
There goes Wazoo legend, the great quarterback, Jack Thompson, the throwing Samoan. So many stories, so much insight. You know, we could talk to him all hour for sure.
Yeah, you know, Jack is a man of wisdom. And you know, the way Jack is, he has such a presence. You know, of course, dealing with, you know, having Jack come into our locker rooms in high school, when I was coaching high school football, you know, just his mere presence meant a lot, you know. And then, you know, when he comes out and he explains, you know, the way life is and the way we should execute, and he's saying, why not us? You know, I believe that's something that, you know, Wazoo could definitely do if Jack goes into the locker room and talks with these players. Because, man, I mean, he grabs your attention, and just a great, great individual.
Absolutely. Jack Thompson, Washington State University icon. Like he said, he's at games every season, 12 years running. It was great talking to him. And when we come back after this here on The Double, we'll get into a little bit of wild card baseball talk, American League West style, the A's, the Mariners, next after this.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the
world's gonna know your name. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Show number 70, Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally. Guest number one, Jack Thompson, Washington State University, the throwing Samoan. And man, it was a great guest nonetheless, Sean Wally.
Absolutely. I mean, we've heard from people all throughout sports media in Seattle that Jack's an awesome guy, and you've known that firsthand as well with working with some of his family members there in the football world. And he was just very gracious to me when I approached him on Saturday in the stands at Martin Stadium, and he was there early and right down on the field and sitting in the front row for a while. And I took a chance and went and talked to him, and there we go.
Yeah, and he is at every single game. And, you know, I can tell you that firsthand. Of course, you know, when my son went on a recruiting visit there, you know, Jack was one of the first people that we saw at the stadium. And he is. He's there from beginning to end. And, you know, talking about that culture, you know, because, you know, Washington State University has a strong backing, which is surprising that, you know, the fans aren't staying from beginning to end, because whenever they come to the Clink in Seattle, they can pack the stadium there. And, you know, they, you know, as far as sticking around, I'm not too sure. I haven't had a chance to see a Wazoo game there in a while. But, you know, it's interesting that the fans aren't sticking around in Pullman, you know, even if it's a, you know, a close contest. And, you know, that's, I love Jack's passion. I love his passion and the fact that he's not afraid to call out, you know, the program or the organization that he loves and says, man, let's stand up and let's be accounted for as far as supporting our program. And that's just who Jack is.
Yeah, it's going to be great seeing Martin Stadium sold out. Of course, a lot of those fans will be Oregon Duck fans. Of course, you've got two Pacific Northwest schools not too far apart in Oregon and Washington State. So it's going to be interesting to see how much of that crowd is crimson and how much of it is green.
Yeah, what such a daunting task. Of course, Jack was talking about, back when Stanford beat USC, and, you know, and of course, you know, Jim Harbaugh was the head coach at the time, and, you know, why not us was the cry in the locker room there. And, you know, I remember where I was, and if you are a Stanford Cardinal fan, if you are a Tavita Pritchard fan, which I am, of course, friends of the family, you know where you were. And, you know, I was in the Bay at the time and, you know, getting ready to work the San Francisco 49ers versus St. Louis Rams game at Candlestick. And I remember watching the game Saturday night and watching Tavita on the screen and, you know, throwing that perfect fade route into the corner to actually beat USC. And, man, I'll never forget that feeling. I'll never forget the feeling of knowing, you know, if you have a pride like I have in Tavita Pritchard, if you have a pride in your organization, such as the Washington State Cougars, man, you gotta love the fact of being an underdog. And with the Oregon Ducks coming in, you know, anything can happen. And I know this isn't the NFL on any given Sunday, but, you know, if you could put things together and if you have that why not us mentality, then, yeah, it can definitely happen.
You know, Mike Leach, the head coach at Washington State, he's been known for his, you know, his air raid offense and pass happy offense, and they definitely do a lot of that. But he has recruited and brought in some prolific, great wide receivers, and they're doing really good things. And he's getting guys from your neck of the woods, down there in Northern California, on into Southern California, keeping a few of the Washington guys in tow as well. And I was able to get into the Mike Leach press conference post game, and he was asked about the daunting task coming up with Oregon, and he flat out had a little Pete Carroll in him and said, it doesn't matter what they do, we control us, and that's all we control. If we do things right, then good things will happen. And if we can get our practices to show up on the field come game time, we'll be okay.
Yeah, and you know, of course, you know, Mike Leach is, he's that type of a person. He's a, you know, he's fiery, hot, renegade type of a coach. He'll get in your face, he'll let you know what, you know, basically what's going on with you and make you a better football player. I guess what the question lies is, since we've been talking about culture, is, and you know, you can look back to coaches past, you know, with Washington State and Mike Price to be, you know, one to mention. I mean, they had some successful years when Mike Price was there. And, I can't really recall the fan base in Pullman actually getting behind 100%, with Stan beginning to end and just, understanding, the true purpose of what was going on the field. And I'm just wondering if Mike Leach can actually do that.
Well, I guess Leach's number one concern is the product on the field.
Exactly.
And winning football games. So if they can start to win games, number one, that'll get more people interested and hopefully keep them around. I wonder a part of it, too, how much of it is the elements for the fans? You're outside, October, November. It's going to be dark, cold, possibly snowing. I mean, it was even down into the upper 30s at night when we were there with the Pac-12 network. So weather was still great, sunny, clear, 75, 80 degrees during the day, but that clear sky at night, it's already in the 30s and we're only in September.
Yeah, I have to disagree with that. I can't blame the elements. We can't blame the elements. What about the teams in the Midwest that go through that week in and week out? The Big 12 teams, that have to battle those same elements. They're still coming out to the games. They're still, excited. I remember back when, Ryan Leaf was quarterback and, there's pouring down snow and, they would play the University of Washington and, the place was packed then, so it's something that, again, that culture that we're talking about as far as, just the fans understanding. And I think it's more of a Pullman thing than an actual Washington State Cougar fan base thing, because again, they come to the Clink, there are a lot of fans that are over in Western Washington. And as a matter of fact, every time you turn on the television on Saturdays for college game day, there is that Wazoo Cougars flag. And there's not only one, but there's two that are waving in the background as far as showing the solidarity of and the love for the Washington State Cougars. So, there's something about that area, the Palouse, that doesn't draw, the attention that, this program so needs.
Well, Saturday is going to be another great place for Martin Stadium and Washington State University to showcase itself and for those fans to hopefully stay and cheer on their team. And even if it's a blowout in the fourth quarter, because the entire nation is going to be watching with the national broadcast of ESPN there, 7:30 kickoff. And hopefully for the Cougars, good things can happen. It is definitely going to be a tall order to try and tackle the Ducks, no pun intended.
Well, there's a strong bias on my part that, and I know that Jack has played a strong role along with, with the Pritchard family and everything at Washington State University. But, of course, I personally will be rooting on the Oregon Ducks. For one reason, of course, my son playing for the Ducks and, who played for the Oregon Ducks, Daniel Barkley, and, Tavita threw a lot of touchdown passes. That connection was great back in the day at Clover Park High School. There were a lot of touchdown throws from Tavita to Barkley, and that propelled both of those young men, one to go on to Stanford, the other going on to the University of Oregon. So, I'm hoping that, the Oregon Ducks continue that train and moving towards a national championship up until they go up against the Auburn Tigers, of course.
Yeah, Sean, it was a great experience for me attending my first football game at Washington State University. I'd never been to a football game there, and working it for the Pac-12 network, I was able not only to meet Jack Thompson, but I was able to finally meet face-to-face with one Jessamyn McIntyre, former big-time guest on the show, producer at 710 ESPN Seattle. She's the sideline reporter for Cougar Radio. And then I got a chance to meet Jason Gesser, who is no longer coaching in Wyoming, and he is on the Cougar Radio broadcast as an analyst.
Yeah, when you go to the Palouse and you go to Martin Stadium, it's like no other in the country. And what I mean by that is, it's one of the smaller Division 1A stadiums in the country. I believe it seats something around 40, 42,000. I think there's some renovations that have been going on that you had mentioned. Just a strong atmosphere as far as, you know, crowd noise is concerned, but it is one of the smaller ones, but it also has that feel that when everything's clicking, you don't want to play there. And so if you're a top juggernaut like an Oregon or a USC or any of the Pac-12 teams that come in, you know that you're playing in someplace different. That's why when you were talking about the weather just a minute ago, that should be an added element for the at least for the players, that when you come over here, when you come into Pullman, it's going to be a lot different and we're going to bring the pain. And so I don't believe that the weather calls for that this weekend, Sean. I believe it probably might be about 70 degrees and balmy. But yeah, when you're talking about in late October, November, yeah, things definitely change.
Well, Sean, there is wild card race coming down to the near end. The Oakland Athletics, Seattle Mariners, Kansas City Royals, all neck and neck right now with the A's on top by game and a half, and they left Seattle with two wins.
Yeah, if there is anything to get the Oakland A's going, of course, being down here in Northern California, this past weekend, while they're calling it a two games in a row, they're calling it like a streak. And so, which is something very, very bad this time of the year to be calling. I mean, wins have been far and in between for the Oakland Athletics. And, of course, going up to the safe and, at the time, the Oakland A's were one game up. And then the next thing you know, the Seattle Mariners win the first game of that three-game series. And it looked like, the bottom was just going to drop out and Seattle was going to turn the corner. Then the A's find a way to show some type of resilience in an environment to where it can be hostile. Let's face it, the Safeco Field can be a lot like the Clink, and the Oakland A's come out and win the last two and take possession of that top wild card.
Have you sent your thank you card to your good buddy Fernando Rodney yet?
Well, the last game, it's funny to me because, Seattle has played so well this year. And of course, they're sitting at 80-68, 12 and a half games out of first. As you had mentioned, 2.5 games out of the number one wild card spot, one game out of the second wild card spot. And they lose this game yesterday to the Oakland Athletics. And I'm looking on my Facebook and, oh, man, just the utter disrespect to Felix Hernandez, man, and just saying how, he's just a choker and this, that, and the other, and, lost game 4-0. I'm like, well, hold on. There's still time left in the season. There's still, series to be played, even though the Seattle Mariners are taking on. This is what's surprising to me, Sean Wally, are the Los Angeles Angels, which I can't even remember the last time they lost. I believe over the last 10 games are like 9-1 or something like that. I thought they might be 10-0. But, to have to play the Los Angeles Angels, Seattle has to take this huge gulp and huge swallow and go, man, I hope we have enough to get through this one, man. Because, you're talking about losing an ace in Richards that the Los Angeles Angels have lost, and you thought, hey, this is the time to take advantage of them, and they haven't missed a beat. And these guys are tough. I mean, you're talking about bats and pitching all around. The LA Angels are looking like that team in the AL.
Yeah, it's a very important series. I mean, everyone is from here on out. There aren't very many left, so the Mariners need to, with this four-game series, at the very least, they need to split. If they can win 3 out of 4, that would be setting them up pretty. But you have to look at it. And Lloyd McClendon, manager of the Mariners, said after yesterday's game, for whatever reason, we just stink at home. And he can't figure out what the problem is. And they've been decidedly better on the road. So hopefully for Mariner fans, they can pick that back up starting tonight, where it is scoreless in the third inning. Iwakuma on the mound for Seattle.
Yeah. So you're mentioning on the road, and do you know what the home record is for the Seattle Mariners this year?
Keep talking, and I'll find out.
38-40. I'll tell you, 38-40. So you're talking about a team that has playoff aspirations, and the biggest thing that they could have to their favor is playing or having home field advantage, and you're 38-40 at home. Now, as you were saying, on the road, 42-28, that's a lot better. So, yeah, this is a great thing that they're on the road. But can you imagine? I mean, you know, and one of the things that the radio stations and the media are talking about down here is the lack of people in the stands, as we were talking about culture before, which is shocking to me, the lack of people in the stands in Seattle when these guys are in a playoff hunt right now. And so, you know, there's still a lot of time. And if the Mariners have more road games, I don't know how many more road games they have left, but there's about 18 games left in the season. Hopefully the majority of those games are on the road.
And they definitely are. You know, they have, I don't have it in front of me, I can look it up, but most of the games left are on the road, including obviously the four through the weekend in Anaheim. So they have to find that magic spark again and see if they can climb back into the wild card hunt and get rid of those pesky Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, you know, Kansas City's in on the mix along with Detroit. You know, it's kind of a, you know, this race is going to go down to the wire. Kansas City's a game out of first place in the Central. And, you know, it was just a few days ago that Detroit was looking up at Kansas City. And, you know, it just seems like, you know, this is going to be an exciting race. You called it, you know, 4 weeks ago, and you said, man, it's not going to be as easy. And, you know, at the time, I'm thinking there's no way in the world that the Oakland A's can actually blunder this. But, man, what a difference a month and a week make. You're looking at the Oakland A's looking up at the Los Angeles Angels, 10 games out. Just think about that. 10 games out. The Oakland A's had just a little over a month ago, had the best record in Major League Baseball. And now they're scratching and fighting and clawing for their lives to make it into the postseason.
Sean, real quick before we run, the Seattle Seahawks definitely stubbed their toe to Antonio Gates in San Diego. Your thoughts?
I don't know what to think. I mean, of course, the San Diego Chargers going to Arizona last week, and Arizona handles business. They look like a team that, you know, is going to, you know, fight for the NFC West. And then they come home, meaning the San Diego Chargers, and they play the Seattle Seahawks. And I'm trying to figure some things out. I had a chance to watch the game while I was in the airport coming back from Houston, and I'm watching the Seahawks. And in the second half, they were able to move the football a lot better. Of course, in the first half, you know, I don't know what in the world was going on. You know, they want to blame things on, you know, Richard Sherman and saying that, you know, he was getting beat. Well, you know, Richard Sherman responds back and says, hey, you know, there are only three passes thrown my way. They were short passes. They weren't big. This is humorous to me that you would even pick something like this. But he is the defense. And so Richard has to understand that as much as he talks, that he has to understand that, you know, he's going to get some flack back when things don't go well. And they picked on him, you know, as far as the reason why, you know, things didn't go right. But, Sean, you know, I have another question. I want to know how one of the top running backs, meaning beast mode, Marshawn Lynch, you know, who can actually keep things going for you and get you in the game. Of course, he had a touchdown from Russell Wilson in the late in the third quarter. How can he only have six carries for the whole football game?
I was wondering if he was hurt. I mean, I kept watching and I'm seeing turban. I'm like, where's beast mode? And in fact, I went on to Twitter and asked Greg Bell the same thing. And you know, he was nice enough to retweet and reply. And it's just interesting why he wasn't out there. I haven't heard any official word if there were any issues, but that, yeah, is a little bit mind-boggling.
Well, here's the bureaucracy and the political side of this whole deal. And this was something that I was going to mention at the beginning of the season, is to watch this relationship. For one, this is somebody who is asking for money while he's in a contract. And of course, Turbin showed that he is an all carry back. He can actually carry the load for the Seattle Seahawks if need be. And you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but Marshawn Lynch, just before the end of the game, left the sidelines and walked into the locker room without the team. And he was very disgruntled as far as the way his ball carries were handled during that game. And I'm sure that there was some talk in the locker room as to why he didn't get the ball. This is something that we're going to watch. You know, now if he doesn't come out the next game, or if the game plan coming out isn't to have a heavy dose of beast mode, then we're going to start to see, you know, a little bit of erosion as far as the relationship is concerned, you know, between Marshawn Lynch and the Seattle Seahawks.
And they've got another big AFC West matchup with the Denver Broncos rolling into town, a matchup just like we had from Super Bowl 48, same two teams, rematch in Seattle. CBS will have the game for you, and I will be there working that game for CBS, a big one in Seattle.
So I made a huge prediction in week one that the San Francisco 49ers were going to crush the Dallas Cowboys, and I was right. I was almost right to the exact score if 49ers made their field goal, and then that turned some things around. They missed it. It was like 27-10 at the time. Could have been 30-10. Or I'm sorry, 28-10 at the time. I'm making a bold prediction. I'm making another bold prediction this weekend. Denver Broncos against the Seattle Seahawks up at the Clink. I am predicting the Seattle Seahawks at home will take care of the Denver Broncos again. Final score, 28-14, Seahawks.
You heard it here first, and I'm glad I'm sitting down so I didn't fall over when Boyd's taking the Seahawks. John, show 70's been good. We got to run. Thanks to Jack Thompson for joining us. Thanks to Don at the station. For Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double, the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double, the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. Talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up. You can beat the...